Hi, I'm Lynn Shay, and welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Podcast. And I mean it, don't go out there.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Review Podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. We really appreciate it. We really hope you enjoyed us our coverage of the two new It films. I can say personally that I had a great time reviewing them. I think the crew did as well. I think that the fans are loving it too, because Pennywise is getting a lot of love listens wise. So we really appreciate that. Before we get started on tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just give us a follow and let us know if you're a new listener. We really love hearing these new stories. And a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. It's got all our interviews, episodes, our celebrity shout outs, and we've got our store on there if you want to pick up any merch. And give us a quick 5-star rating on iTunes, too. We really appreciate that. We hit 100 a couple weeks ago, and that was a big personal goal for me. All right, let's jump into tonight's film review. Tonight is Brother Brian's pick, and we're going back to 2010 with Insidious with the GOAT, James Wan. Brian, you want to get – Brian, I'm the James Wan. I'm the James Wan stan of this crew, and I'm proud to admit it. Brian, you want to give us your quick overview real quick, brother?
Yeah, sure. And forgive me a little bit. I'm kind of under the weather today, so my voice may be crazy. But anyway, I picked this because, you know, like The Conjuring, you know, I avoided this movie until recently. Like I said, after Paranormal Activity, I avoid all demon movies if possible. But unlike Paranormal Activity, this one didn't actually scare me. And it's, you know, for the exact same reason Conjuring didn't. I talked about it in my review earlier, but on the Conjuring, but you know, it showed me, it's the same thing, because it showed me the demon, and therefore, like, it kind of took everything away from my mind that could have created, you know, something crazy out there to scare me and scare myself, kind of like Paranormal Activity or whatever. And then it just became, you know, a popcorn flick at that point, also like The Conjuring. And but also like Conjuring, I did get invested at that point in the story. You know, this is also almost exactly like it in the fact that I feel like that the first half of this movie is creepier than the second, but the second half is more entertaining and a really good movie, if that makes sense. I told the guys this off air, but I actually started writing a summary of this, and it got so long I decided, like, to turn it into a blog entry on don'tgooutthere.com. Titled More Credit Is Due, where basically I talk about how Lee Whannell deserves more credit for changing the horror genre than he gets, which started with Saw. And sidebar, I didn't even recognize him as Specs in this film, by the way. I completely didn't until I liked my second watching. But obviously, I'm a huge James Wan fan, too. He's amazing and deserves all the credit in the world, but so does Whannell, in my opinion, as well. I really enjoyed this movie. It doesn't have problems, yes, and maybe I'm still in fanboy stages with it because I just kind of discovered it recently and it hasn't had time over the years for me to really dissect it, but I really enjoy the story here, and also in Insidious 2. I actually probably enjoy that one a little bit better just because of how it Back to the Future 2's this film and gives you even more insight into this one. But lastly, a little tidbit, I went to Halloween Horror Nights in 2015 without having seen this film, and we went into the Insidious haunted house, and let me tell you, that shit was well done, especially after seeing the film.
All right, I'll go next real quick. Self-admitted James Wan stan, big Lee Whannell fan too. He's great. They're both great. I kind of agree he doesn't get enough credit. They've made so many great movies. I love this movie. I actually agree with you, Brian. Insidious 2 is my favorite of the franchise. I love all four of the Insidious movies. The only problem I really have with them is it's kind of the same movie, all four movies, which is kind of what scares me about The Conjuring 3, because eventually a good thing does get kind of stale, I guess, when it's the same thing right over and over. But I do love this movie, and I got to give a quick shout out to, I don't know who planned this, Whannell or James Wan, but they are so slick at leaving these subtle clues in the movie, or little subtle hints. And one of my fun facts, I'm sure all of y'all saw it, but it's great. I never noticed until I read it. But I love this movie. Go ahead, Mike.
So as I've said on the show a million times, I'm not going to be a dead horse. This is not my type of film. It's not my favorite kind of horror genre. But all that being said, I think there's a lot that this movie does well. It makes some really big mistakes that kind of pull me out of it. But overall, I like the movie. I definitely don't hate it. The movie is well made. You guys talked about James Wan, but James Wan, Lee Whannell, Jason Blum, Pelly, all those guys are producers, director, part of making this movie, and they do a great job. The movie is well shot. I love the way they use the music, the lighting, the darkness in particular, more so than the lighting. The way that they use all that really it's a well-made film. The story is not my cup of tea. I'm going to get into that. But overall, it's got some pros and cons. But what I will say, I love the acting in this movie. Just right off the bat, I love this entire cast, especially the two leads between Byrne and Patrick Wilson, which I have a funny tidbit about later. But again, like it. Sometimes it goes a little long, but I feel that it's at the very least, it's well made. It's just not my particular cup of tea sometimes.
All right, guys, here's the thing. I don't
Haters in the building.
I don't want to be the squeaky wheel here, but I have a feeling, that scene from Game of Thrones where Jon Snow faces the whole fucking cavalry. Yeah, that's me. I'm gonna be facing everyone in this movie. I have a feeling, just because I think this movie's got a lot of issues. I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen. However, there are things that I just don't like. I think they got wrong. And this is not from someone who dislikes James Wan and Lee Whannell, because if you go back and listen to the Saw review we did, I was like one of the highest scores we gave. I gave it a 9.5. I love the Saw series.
Me too.
This movie, there's certain things about it that we'll get into when we do the scene by scene that just don't do it for me. And it's not, like Mike said, it's not because of the kind of movie it is, because like you said, this isn't my kind of movie either. Like we talked about when we were doing Paranormal Activity, Brian and I are in the same boat as far as that goes. Fuck all kinds of possession movies. But that one actually scared me. I thought it was a well-made movie. This one, I think, has its issues that I couldn't get past. And I don't want to, completely shit on someone, but when you talk about the cast, there's one person in particular that just, I don't like her in basically everything she's in. No offense, because I'm sure she's a very nice lady, and she's got a very storied career that I'm sure that she's proud of, and anyone would be proud to have. But Lynn Shay, to me, takes me out of the
film. Oh, I cannot wait to fight you later.
Takes me out of the film. Every time I see Lynn Shay, I think of the Dirty Landlord and Kingpin. And and I just, her cadence when she speaks, to me, it feels like she's reading a script. I don't know how to describe that other than she's not a believable median, I guess, in this film. Is that what you call her? Whatever she is. But yeah, there's issues I have with it. We'll get into it in the scene by scene. I don't hate the movie, but I don't love it. So Joyride's going to have some company.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, Brian, he's about to descend another movie of your picks.
Descent. I like it.
Which was a great movie.
Before we start, I just want to say real quick, forgot to say this, but Mike was right. I love Patrick Wilson. Insidious, yeah. And the Conjuring movies. Love Patrick Wilson. Rose Byrne, still in Mike's line, Call Me Sometime. She's great in these two movies.
Yeah.
And I'm completely opposite of you, Dustin. I love Lynn Shay in these movies.
Me too.
That's fine. That's fine.
Man,
I love the fact that Tucker, my guy Angus, he is always eating in every one of these movies as soon as he shows up. That man is always hungry.
Hey, man. Hey, I love Lynn Shay. I mean, going back to freaking Nightmare on Elm Street, man. Big fan, but I understand what you're saying, Dustin.
She's very accomplished, and she's been in some great movies. And Kingpin is one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm a huge Woody Harrelson fan, and Bill Murray is the GOAT. But she, I don't know. I'm just not the biggest Lin Shay fan. Let's put it that way.
Hey, I picked this movie, and I will admit, I mean, it's not a perfect movie. There are a lot of nitpicks I have as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no movie out there that has no flaws in it, I don't think. But y'all ready to jump into the scene-by-scene?
And I don't feel bad about that. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't feel bad about, you know, my opinion on this, because I just know you guys are going to tear me apart in a couple weeks when we do my next movie. So it's fine. Let's go.
Yes, I am.
Not me. Not
yes,
me. I am. Not me. I got your back, brother.
Hey, that scene in Terrifier where he chainsaws the girl in half, that's what I'm doing to that movie and you.
Spoiler alert, Mike. Spoiler alert. Good Lord.
Well, why was that? Listening to this show, you've never seen Terrifier, that's on you. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, trust me. You're leading a good life if you have not seen Terrifier yet. Yeah, don't watch it.
Well, the villain is great. We'll save that for another time, though.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
All right. The film starts. It just on my I rented on Amazon Prime because I forgot to bring the Blu-ray with me to Jasper. At the beginning, it just says a James Wan film. It starts with this panning shot in a little boy's room, and it leads to the kitchen with a shadow through a window. Then it stops on the image of the old scary woman, which I think is a callback to Mary Shaw from Dead Silence, because it looks just like her. Title card and eerie music. The opening credits with black and white shots of the house. Renee wakes up to a snoring Josh. The house is covered with all these unpacked boxes. Dalton tells her he doesn't like his room. Then the mom and Dalton, they just look through some old photos together. They joke about her age. Now I wrote, there's chaos now. Renee, she's on the phone with a bill company, and all the kids, you know, it's the morning before school. The kids are going crazy. Josh comes downstairs to get coffee. Renee finds all the books she put on the shelf on the ground now. Renee seems very overwhelmed. Now she's playing the piano, then hears the baby crying. She hears like a furniture scraping noise. She puts the baby back into the crib and checks the attic. And I wrote, the furnace just turns on randomly and she leaves. Josh gets home from work and he compliments how much she's gotten unpacked. Dalton is playing with toys on the stairs and the attic door randomly opens. Renee can't find her sheet music. Dalton goes in the attic. He climbs the ladder to try to turn the light on, and then like the rung of the ladder breaks and he falls. He gets up and hears noises, and then I wrote, then a loud bang, and like there's this loud bang, and the parents, they run up to check on Dalton. His legs really hurt. Josh carries him out, and Renee finds her box of sheet music in the attic. That's the first two scenes I got. Go ahead, Brian.
So the violins, just right off the bat, the violins and this theme music, I love it. It's awesome to me. It takes me back to like old black and white horror films. And I know Mike is going to touch on this too, but the soundtrack in this film, I completely agree, I think is amazing. It obviously, the soundtrack becomes, you know, a staple in Wan movies moving going forward. And, you know, like we've talked about many times before, it becomes its own character, especially in this one. I can't say enough. You guys have already touched on it a little bit, but I can't say enough about Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson in this movie. Obviously, like I said, I saw Conjuring before I saw this, so that was my introduction to Wilson. So I had that in the back of my head, and it didn't really interfere at all with how I viewed this, which speaks to me speaks to his performance and how well it is, because it made me forget who he was in The Conjuring. They had a great chemistry, and just obviously to me carry this movie. Fun fact, and if you don't get this, go back and listen to our 7 review on don'tgooutthere.com. But Dustin, guess who originally turned down the role to play Josh Lambert?
Oh, I know, brother.
your boy Ethan Hawke.
My man Ethan Hawke. That would have taken this movie up 4 points for me.
Oh,
I mean,
Ethan Hawke. So.
Yeah, well, Patrick Wilson's no Brad Pitt either, but I mean, you know, Ethan Hawke would have worked out. Anyway, all right, so to the movie, slow open, but it does a really good job with character development. And to me, you can kind of really see the stress levels with Rose Byrne's character, Renee, kind of raised with her acting over the next couple of days. And lastly, like The Conjuring, does a decent job of building some scare factor. Just for me, that's immediately out the window as soon as they kind of show me the demon. But these scenes, they do a good job, although I believe a Darth Maul looking demon exists way before I believe a kid that age goes into a scary attic by himself. No believability in that for me. Trust me, my kids would not step foot in an attic like that by itself, much less go exploring. So anyway.
So saving my thoughts on Darth Maul for later. real quick, right off the top, I love the opening credits. They're a little long, but they kind of set the mood for, you know, the movie and how we're going to, you know, how things are going to play out. And like you mentioned, Brian, the music, the way it's used throughout the whole film, but particularly in this opening credit scene and all that is very good, very creepy. It's not like an iconic score or anything, but it is one that sticks with me. You know, it's one that I can retain and remember. As far as the opening scene, not a whole lot happens. There's slow, but like you said, there's good character development there. So it's not necessarily a knock. It's just not a whole lot of like things that are pertinent actually happen except for laying the groundwork. I thought it was funny that he called his mom old as hell when Rose Byrne can call me anytime.
I second that.
So, call me anytime. I'll pay the phone bill. As soon as his mom is old, and he said that the last time I watched it, I yelled at you, little shit. Man, fuck you, man. Anyway, so I love the way these opening scenes are shot. I'm going to say that a bunch just because I do. Normally, I feel like I'm about to be Nico and, you know, kind of jerk off James Wan here, but I love the way this movie is shot. I think the way they use the lights and the darks, you know, throughout the whole movie, but particularly in some of these very slow opening scenes, kind of set the mood, the atmosphere, the vibe. Big fan of that. So again, not a whole lot happens as far as like action and like, you know, we're moving the story along, but there's some good character development here. And like you said, Brian, the stress level, I think Rose Byrne does awesome in this role with this. She is concerned straight from the get-go and she portrays it really well. So big, big thumbs up to her, man. I'm going to praise her throughout. Like, this is probably a review I'm going to end up repeating myself because the things I like, I really like. And the things I hate, I really hate. And the acting is one of the things that I really like. And even in these opening scenes where not a whole lot happens, the acting kind of shines through for me. So that's all I have on that.
Okay, so I'll start by saying that to me, the opening credits were too long. I love the soundtrack, the score. I think they do a great job of that throughout the entire movie. So I want to preface it by saying that there's a positive. But these opening credits just took too long. Took a while to get into it. But also, not just they take too long, but listen, I get it. Not every movie can have an original idea because that's tough, right? But to me, the moving into a new house is kind of overdone. We still got to unpack and everything. And that's one of the themes that it's just played out in the horror genre. We move into a new house and, oh, the house is haunted. Well, we find out later it's not the house, blah, 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 but whatever. And so that kind of instantly took me out of it. Despite what I said about the casting as far as Lin Shaye goes, Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne, Ty Simpkins, all three did a phenomenal job in this movie. Rose Byrne, she does great in everything she's in, as does Patrick Wilson and Ty Simpkins. So, I mean, that's great. But just to me, like I said, the opening scenes took too long. The best part about it was the lighting and the score. I think that James Wan, I mean, we said it when we did the Saw review, how he used the lighting to create just this grungy feeling. Well, he used the lighting in this film to make it just ominous and creepy as shit. And I think that he doesn't get enough credit for his ability to do that. So hats off to that. That part is very well done in this movie. I will give credit where credit is due. I liked, actually, there's another part that I like, the foreshadowing when they're looking at the pictures and he's, where's the pictures of dad? He goes, I don't think we have any. He doesn't like to take his picture, blah, blah, blah. That's a great foreshadowing for, you know, the last third of the movie when we find out that tidbit. But but overall, like you said, not a whole lot to break down in these films. It's just for what it was, kind of took too long for my taste.
And that's fair, by the way. Like I tend to agree with, we could have hurried it up just a little bit.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. I mean, your difference in, like, there's a very thin line between character development and boring. And so, like, right, you know, sometimes that waffles depending on your taste. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely can see that.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I just love Patrick Wilson so much, I let it slide. when I stand hard. I think y'all know that already.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, they tell Dalton to be careful as they put him in bed. They joke about putting their kids on leashes. Renee tells Josh how tough her day was. Then they just have some play talk about her, you know, her sheet music and her songs. Quick shots of the house and everyone sleeping. It stops when it gets to Dalton with this eerie music. Renee sends Josh to wake Dalton up, but he's not budging. He shakes him and he doesn't awake. They take him to the hospital. He's in a coma, but there's no brain trauma or anything wrong. They're both concerned. 3 months later, home nurse shows Renee what she's been doing with all of his tubes and all that. And I wrote, Renee looks very broken. She's playing piano, but you can tell she's mentally worn down. She hears whispers in the baby monitor. She carries it to the staircase. Then the voice yells, I want it now. She drops it when she hears the baby cry and runs upstairs. She grabs her baby and doesn't see anyone in the room. Now she's at Foster's room and asks why he didn't tell them about the award he got. You know, I'm pretty sure Foster kind of feels not neglected, but he's not getting attention because of Dalton. So I think that's what's going on with him. He tells her she's scared of Dalton. He walks around at night. Now it's nighttime. Foster wakes up to the heart monitor noise. He stares at Dalton and closes his door. He hears footsteps approach his door and runs to bed. Renee tells Josh about the weird baby monitor incident. Then they hear a knocking noise. Josh goes downstairs to look. He looks out the front door, but no one's there. Renee goes to check the baby crying, and we see a figure behind the crib. She yells for Josh, but it's not there anymore. The alarm goes off, and he goes downstairs, and the door is wide open. He grabs a fire poker and scopes out the house. Then the alarm goes off again. He shuts the door, and he turns off the alarm. That's the next two scenes I got. Go ahead, Brian.
So, yeah, parents' worst nightmare right there with something happening to your small child and you being just helpless. So that immediately got me personally invested in this. And it really gives me goosebumps every time I watch him trying to wake up Dalton. And, you know, I've seen this twice and I honestly teared up twice when the doctor tells Renee that he's not waking up. And that's because of Rose's performance. I mean, she's really amazing there portraying that emotion. Hearing that shit on the baby monitor, gonna admit that got me. Again, that stuff hits home as I have a baby that old and, you know, we're doing the baby monitor thing right now, all the time after listening to that white noise constantly. Does my brain think it like hears shit on there? And, you know, I'm going to admit, or I'm going to say, you know, more times than I'd like to admit, I've just went and got the baby and brought her in, put her in the bedroom with me so I could actually sleep better. So it's also the lack of score. Like when she's really trying to listen, that almost like pulls you closer to the TV trying to hear it too. Great job right there. And let me just say, and it's not a knock on this movie, it's most movies like this, but if my kid tells me he's scared of his brother who's in a coma walking around at night, I'm not going to just make the kid go to bed and act like nothing's happening. Like, you know, sleep in the bed with the kid, stay up. Shit, I don't know. Just a nitpick on most horror movies, I think, for me. But, you know, and you know, it was kind of a pretty creepy scene with the boy closing the door, you know, after looking at his brother, though. And lastly, the knocking on the door scene with Josh really gives me, you know, Strangers vibes. And this is what I was talking about in my opening, like about with the Back to the Future 2, because, you know, you find out that this was, spoiler alert, Josh the whole time, which is brilliant. And I don't know if when Lee Winnell wrote this, you know, he had already had that in mind. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure James Wan has writing credits on the second one. So whoever the hell came up with this shit, bravo, because it makes it even better knowing this. And it's freaking brilliant to me. Admittedly, though, it does take a little bit of the tension away knowing that. Yeah. So once you know it's Josh, you're not really scared of it being, you know, a demon or whatever. And so that's my only nitpick about that.
So right off the bat with these scenes, I kind of want to touch on something that Dustin mentioned. But it kind of pops up right here for me. Some of this starts to feel, and it goes away, but a little bit early on, it feels like an Amityville rehash. It's something, it's a new house. The house is haunted. It's a happy family, like seen it a million times. So it has like an Amityville horror vibe to it, which is a story we've seen a million times. That goes away, but it is something that I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. New house that looks like it's that you know was built in the 1860s. This is haunted as fuck. Mm-hmm. I get it. And that's just
Poltergeist too. It pulls a lot from Poltergeist.
Oh, absolutely,
a lot.
Actually, there's a ton of Poltergeist influence on this movie. I'm glad you said that. And
this movie's actually good though.
Yeah, well, that's this movie's much better than Poltergeist.
Sorry, Poltergeist.
No, wait, just a minute here. Okay, sorry.
We're getting off track.
Okay, yeah. All right. So just bringing it back in, but that, again, it goes away because, you know, the twists and turns and the writing and stuff they kind of throw in there. It is a lot different, and they do something really smart that I'll give them credit for in a little bit. But, you know, that kind of starts to sink in with me in the opening of these scenes anyway, where I'm like, I've seen this a million times, and that's on first viewing. So this time I was really kind of not bored, but just kind of like, I'm not really a big fan of this, but the whole time I'm expecting Patrick Wilson's character Josh to go crazy because that's Amityville, you know, and that's the kind of, you know, he starts out kind of nice, but he's a little bit of a distant dad in this new house. Like, I don't know, it's a little strange. I'm so used to seeing Pat Wilson, you know, be a really caring, you know, husband and stuff in the Conjuring series, so it's kind of a weird thing. But anyway, sometimes I forget there's three kids, and that's my own fault. You know, like, it's just something that I wrote down because I'm watching this movie, and I was like, I kind of forget there's three kids if you include the crying baby. You know, so Dalton going into a coma does hit you emotionally. It does pull me in emotionally. It gets me invested. So that, you know, all the hospital scenes, they pull you in. They make me invest. And I think they're some of my favorite scenes in the movie just because the acting is really, really well done by Rose Byrne. I think she portrays, you know, sadness and grief and all that stuff so well that I'm invested in the story here with Dalton being in this quote-unquote coma. And I feel bad for the character of Renee in general. She's kind of doing this alone, at least in this part of the movie. So the voiceover on the monitor isn't really my thing. Like, I don't find that to be all that scary. But again, I also don't have a child. I don't have a baby. So that would probably creep most normal people out. I'm not normal. So that's my fault. Again, I want to repeat this. All of this stuff is shot really well. Like, I love just the direction in this movie. So big kudos to that. And the reason I'm repeating myself is because while I'm watching it this last time, I kept thinking, man, this is, it's not my cup of tea, but I'm invested just because of how well the movie is made. And I'm a big fan of movies that are really well made. You know, in the scene where he goes downstairs, of course, the first thing I think of, and I know this is kind of weird, man, Patrick Wilson's a ripped son of a bitch bastard, man. Bastard. He's got quads for days in them boxer shorts, man. I'm just saying. Anyway, I'm not saying he can call me to tell him I built Skarsgård, but I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there, man. Yeah, so I love the way they use sound here, the way they, you know, it's all kinds of different sounds and, you know, the suspense they kind of build to it. Now, the buzzing noise is annoying as fuck, but everything else, I'm a big fan of how they kind of build up. My one big negative, and this is just me, it's a personal preference, I'm not a big fan of something actually being in that window. That takes me out of it a little bit. I like we talked about in Paranormal Activity, what I don't see, theater of the mind, my imagination is much more creepy and scary than actually seeing something. Right. And when I see something in the window, it kind of, you know, and it could have been the scariest monster on the planet. It's just not my cup of tea. So, but other than that, these scenes are really well done. Like, I'm still at this point invested in the story and in the movie. So.
All right. So one of my biggest flaws with this movie that I was alluding to earlier was the fact that I feel like the demons or the terrors or the scaries in this movie, they don't really have a true identity. And what I mean by that is they can't make up their mind about how they want to attack, how they want to go about their business here. So in this part of the film, you're not sure what they really want, right? Like, they're just showing up randomly. They're opening doors. They're setting off alarms. They're talking over baby monitors. But then we find out later, and this is what one of my biggest beefs is, all they really want is that empty body laying there. So why the hell are they scaring the shit out of everybody else? Shouldn't they just be going for the body? And so that's one of my biggest things is I feel like it's kind of it lazily relies on jump scares and cliche scare tactics to drive home the fact that this is a demon movie. Because when you get down to the, you know, when it's nut cutting time, all these demons really wants that empty body there. They should all be fighting to get that empty body. They shouldn't really be running through the house playing, which I know, okay, what you said earlier, it, you know, we'll find out in the second movie, blah, blah, blah. But watching this as a standalone, you don't know that. And
I'm no Insidious, you know, master at all, whatever. I'm not, you know, some genius about Insidious at all. So I may just be interpreting differently, but I took it as that there are some poltergeist type things that are entities or whatever that are stuck in that little dimension that are trying to get, you know, get back, but the demons are completely separate and that they are, they're the ones trying to really possess the body and keep it so that it could hurt people. And the other ones are just kind of trying to get back because they're dead. And it takes like a whole bunch of energy to do that. Maybe, I don't know, you know, I said, I'm no expert on it, but, I'm no Lin Shaye on Paranormal Activity here, but.
and you might be 100% right. Maybe I'm overthinking that part or underthinking what I, you know, maybe I missed something, but it also gets back to the fact, you know, you hear the voice on the baby monitor and she just stands at the bottom of the stairs looking up. I'm sorry, I'm not a parent, but if I were and I heard that shit coming from the baby monitor where my child is in a coma, and I would be hauling ass up those stairs to find out who's in there, who's saying something. But she just kind of lollygagged around and waited for it. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, there's things about this movie that I just think that they got wrong. That's one of them. The lack of identity for the demons or the whatever they are. And you may be 100% on that. So maybe I'm wrong. But just from when I'm watching, what I took from it, it was that. And then also you see, you know, Patrick Wilson's character kind of be disengaged and not really giving a shit what's going on. I could have used more storytelling there, more, you know, do something to really draw me into why he's so detached, make me care that he's detached, because right now I feel like he's just an asshole, and Rose Byrne deserves better. but, you know, that's where I'm at.
I'll give you better, Rose.
You know, I don't hate it. It's just I don't think that there's anything great about this set of scenes.
No, I'm with you. I've seen this movie a few different times, and honestly, in my notes, I wrote down, you know, later on that they're ghosts, and I was like, no, maybe they're demons. So I wrote down they're all demons. So if there's any paranormal super stands out there, I'm sorry if I get it wrong.
Well, and also I want to follow that up by saying that I watched this movie twice within the past like 4 or 5 days to get ready for this. But before that, I hadn't seen it since it came out. When I watched this movie when it came out, if we'd reviewed it right then, my opinion would be a lot different. But that's also 10 years ago. I feel like I've grown a lot as a person. I've grown a lot as someone who can appreciate nuances in film. And so that's just where I'm at right now, 2020. I'm picking up on these things that I didn't pick up on the first time I watched it, and I liked it a lot more back then.
Right. That's fair.
Oh, yeah. Josh is at his teacher's desk and class is misses. He calls Renee and says he's going to be at work late. I wrote he seems really stressed and he has flashbacks to his younger self. Renee hears him get home at 11:27 p.m. She asks the nurse of any progress of Dalton. She says she's giving up and is pushed to her limit. And then I wrote she notices like this. It looks like a bloody handprint, but I read that it's just lipstick by Dalton's feet. Josh wakes up at his desk and listens to his voicemail. He gets home to Renee on the porch, and she questions why he's been so late. She's scared. She says she thinks the house is haunted. Things move. She says she feels like eyes are watching her. And she tells Josh she feels like he isn't there for her. It's like he seems real distant and absent. She gives him the sheet with the handprint on it. Josh is asleep on the couch and more flashbacks as a kid. The handprints are on Dalton's window now. Renee wakes up in a panic. There's like this, there's some man looking creature or being outside pacing outside her window. Now he's in the room and charges at her. Josh wakes up to her screams. He runs into her on the floor and the baby crying. She wants to leave the house. He says that they're gone. Now we see movers unpacking their items in the new house. Renee and Lorraine, Josh's mom, are unpacking in the kitchen. Lorraine is impressed she got Josh to take a picture. Renee turns on her record and is cleaning up some. Renee doesn't notice a little boy by her laundry basket. And I never noticed that little boy until this past watch, honestly. She takes the trash out in the record. The song changes. She looks in the window and sees the boy dancing. She runs in and it stops. The door closes and we see him run through the house. She goes into the room and sees the rocking horse rocking by itself. The door flies open and she goes in Dalton's room. She grabs a hockey stick and the little boy jumps out the dresser. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead, Brian. That's all I got for those two scenes.
Yeah, obviously when you hear Josh has to work late, your mind goes directly to Affair. And, you know, it's actually a pleasant surprise in this movie that that wasn't the case here.
Yep.
You know, and just like he and Vera in Conjuring, Patrick and Rose to me in this movie has great chemistry. That scene in the driveway about his working late really shows that just yet again. I became really invested with them as a couple. It feels genuine. I promise you, she's much more forgiving than my wife would be in that whole situation. But plus, this whole bloody handprint thing, I think, is glossed over way too easily. It was like used as a tool to like end the fight instead of fucking look at this. I mean, like, that's a big deal. And they just kind of glossed it over and just, oh, here, look at this, and walked off. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just, I didn't really like the way that it was used as a tool there. Also, you can clearly see someone drew a Billy doll on the chalkboard in the scene with Josh in the classroom, which, very well drawn Billy doll in there. I thought it was awesome.
Dude, I never noticed that. I got that in my fun facts.
Yep.
Oh, I was like, when I read that, I brought up the Amazon Prime again. I was like, no, wait. I went to, I was like, those sneaky son of a guns.
But okay, so this is the point in the movie that it doesn't become scary to me anymore, and more it's like science fiction-y. And that's right when you see the ghost that looks like David from the Lost Boys. Like, so we have discount Darth Maul, and we have David from the Lost Boys so far. So like, these ghosts are just not, I completely agree with Mike, like, less is more. And I kind of wish, but it's kind of like The Conjuring, I kind of wish you wouldn't show me so much of these demons and ghosts if you're trying to scare me. But give Lee Ronell credit here. That horror cliche where, you know, they don't leave the haunted house, well, they fucking left, and it didn't help. So throw that into the wind, but I'm glad that he little added that in there. Lastly, you know, the little boy was a nice touch too. That old record music we've talked about being creepy so many times in horror movies, I loved it. But this being in broad daylight kind of makes me not as creeped out. But I want to give props to not having false jump scares here, for actually showing you that kid hiding in there. And I don't know how much influence, if any, it had on Juan, you know, in the first Conjuring, but this kind of feels a lot like the Clap game, but without a false jump scare in there.
Yeah. So my first thought, you know, my first thought is less Affair and more, man, this man is scared to go home, man. Yeah. Get your ass on home to Rose Byrne, man. I would go home to her anytime I could. You motherfucker. I don't care what's going on with you mentally, dog. Anyway, that's just me. I would never leave home if I was married to Renee. Anyway, hospital scenes, again, said it. I'm going to repeat, love the scenes in the hospital. The acting, so good. The bloody handprint is fine, but I'm confused at that point. What am I supposed to be dealing with here? Am I dealing with a ghost? I know you guys touched on it, so I'm going to kind of retouch on it because I never gave my thoughts. What am I dealing with? What is the scary big monster thing here? Am I dealing with a demon, a ghost, a person? Like, it's so weird to me. It's kind of out of place. And, you know, maybe it's something Brian touched on. They just didn't really do anything with it. It's just kind of there. And so I'm not a big fan of it. It's fine, but I don't think it adds any kind of scare level or anything like that. It's just another scene to me that I feel like isn't entirely necessary. But you touched on the porch scene or the driveway scene. I think it's great. Acting shines through. I think Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne are a great on-screen couple. The chemistry is there, fully invested in them and their relationship. So big props to that. I normally, less is more, like you said, and I am theater of the mind, you know, oriented. But I actually like the use of the figure outside the window here, kind of pacing back and forth. The way they use the foot stops as the sound is creepy and builds tension, and I kind of like that. So that whole part I like. Again, old song, creepy as fuck. This is old song being scary 101. The way it's used, it's perfect. I love it. a little boy dancing would, if I walked up on that, no matter what time of day it was, I'd be scared as fuck. Whether it was a ghost or a real little boy, I'd be, why the fuck are you in my house? So, also, fuck this rocking horse. Just saying. So, one thing I want to point out, Brian, you touched on it. They actually leave the house. Now, it didn't work, but big props to a couple that's like, you know, this motherfucker's haunted. Let's get the fuck out, because everyone else just stays. They just stay. They just fucking sit there with their thumb up their ass and wait on these spooky ghosts to get them. No, this couple is smart. You know what? There's something in this house. Get the fuck out. At least they tried. Now, it followed them. Not my fault. But at least the effort is being made to get the fuck out. You know? So I like that little twist that, you know, no one ever leaves in a horror movie. Nope. Lee Winnell wrote it in the script. They actually got the fuck out. So I really enjoyed that. So, yeah. I mean, that's all I have on these scenes. Not bad, but the bloody hand is where I get a little bit – I kind of start to kind of get out of the movie a little bit, just because as much as I love the acting and the way it's made, the story is starting to get a little muddy to me, a little – it doesn't click with me, you know, and like, you know, use the word science fiction-y. I guess that's true. I'm not a big science fiction guy, so maybe that's why this kind of starts to pull me out just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, the bloody handprint to me is where the storyline, it drives home how convoluted this shit is. Because what is going on? What is the purpose of these demons or whatever they are? Because you're leaving bloody fingerprints, handprints, and, you know, it's just, it just so happens that it was, you know, it was the mom that saw it. It wasn't the nurse that was also in the room, because she is, I'll get it. And then she sees it, and so that could have been made a bigger deal. But, you know, I do like the fact that they got out of the quote-unquote haunted house. They moved, which explains the cliche that I was irritated with in the beginning. Oh, okay, we're getting another horror movie where they just moved into a house. I would have preferred, actually, that that's mentioned beforehand. Maybe we see them in the old house, and then we get, like, a scare scene, and then it flashes forward to their moving into the house. I don't know. Maybe that would have taken the sting away, from the cliche to me. Who knows? We'll never know, because that's not how the way they did it. The demon that's pacing back and forth and then lunges at her, I couldn't help but think that he looks like Loki from the Avengers movies. He looks
right. Yeah, there you go.
Tom Hiddleston. But that scene also to me is like, okay, what is going on with these guys? How much power do they have? He physically touched her. Why is he trying to French her? I get it. I would too. But why is he trying to stick his tongue down her throat? I thought the premise was they were trying to get this empty body. And so that just goes back to what I was saying earlier. Why is he trying to fuck up the mom here? I don't get the direction of these demons or these scary characters here, whatever you want to call them. Because they're kind of all over the place, man. I mean, we see another scene later where a drawer's opened up and then a hand just reaches out and grabs someone. Are they there to scare the shit out of people, or are they there to get that body? So that's part of my qualm with rating this movie favorably, is that I don't understand the direction. I don't understand what I'm supposed to be watching a lot of times with these scary characters.
I agree with that 100%. I have that wrote down later, but I'm so glad you said that now, Dustin, because that is something that there's a lot of different entities and things I'm supposed to be scared of, and I don't know what my main focus is supposed to be here, right. And that gets a little messy for me. So that does take the movie down for me as well. All the positives I've said, the story is where I start to get a little bit negative on it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. The story is it, because the way the film is shot, the casting, outside of one character, the lighting, the music, everything to me in this film is a positive, but the storyline. And so that's unfortunately the biggest part of a movie. So that's where I'm at with the film. That's what I meant when we were talking about the overview and when we've been in the group text, you know, the past couple of days. That's what I've been getting at. It's not that I hate everything about this movie, because it has so much going for it. It's just there's certain things that get wrong. I don't know what I'm supposed to be afraid of.
I think we should get Lee Winnell on the show, and he should tell us.
That would be great.
I'm trying.
That would be epic.
Come on, Lee. Let's go, baby.
Josh comes home to Renee and the priest in his house. The priest leaves and Renee tells Josh it's followed them to this house. Lorraine tells them of the dream she's had of this house. Says she could see someone, she could see someone awake. She goes into Dalton's room and someone in there with him in the corner. It wants Dalton. Lorraine gets jump scared by the red-faced demon. They run into Dalton's room and it's been trashed. Renee begs Josh to help. Barbara says she knows someone who can help. Tucker and Speck show up to do some testing before Elise arrives. Tucker does the electromagnetic fields, and Speck says, you know, he's just he's checking out a bunch of toys for no reason. Nerd. Just kidding, Lee Wanell. He gets scared when he sees the creepy woman smile through the modified toy. And I'm just going to say now that that woman throughout this movie is creepy to me with that smile. He says, call Elise now. Elise arrives. She tells Josh he's grown so much. Elise walks through the house. She has Specs follow to draw what she sees. She checks on Dalton and looks up through the ceiling fan. She pulls Specs close and he starts to sketch. Renee grabs a sketch and sees the red-faced demon. She turns the light on to nothing there. Elise prepares them for her readings. Son isn't in a coma. His spiritual body isn't with his physical body. Dalton is haunted. Astro projection. Dalton is a very good astro projector. He's not afraid because he thinks they're dreams. He's lost in the further. Josh appears sketched out. A demon seeks Dalton's body to harm others. Renee asks what can they do to help. Josh says no to Elise's idea to find Dalton. She cries and says, you don't believe me. Elise and the two detectives leave. Josh is with Dalton now, just talking to him. A picture falls, and it's the red-faced demon. He sees all the other drawings now. Last night, I watched myself sleep. Then I flew away. Josh cries when he sees the Superman picture. He says okay to Renee about having Elise help. I will say before you start, Brian, when Patrick Wilson, you know, he breaks down after seeing the pictures, the drawings, I really felt that, and I think that's just because Patrick is so great. I really like that scene, but go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. And so this is the first time you see the Darth Maul demon. And look, I'm not going to lie. Darth Maul actually looked better and more evil than this. And I mean, that movie came out so much longer before this. So why didn't they go with another design here? I mean, it looked like Darth Maul vacationed in Hawaii or something. I don't really know. Like, it just, it's impossible not to make that connection. I think that even if you've seen the previews to the Star Wars Phantom Menace, so I wish they would have gone a different route there. And I'll actually say this later. I think I wrote it down in my notes for the next set of scenes, but the demon that I'll talk about it next group of scenes. Obviously, this franchise has become Lynn Shay's, despite her, you know, spoiler alert, death in this one. And I know Destiny doesn't care for her, but I really love her. I don't know. She reminds me of my grandma, and I can't help but relate to her because of that. And Destin just called her an old hag, so thanks for calling my grandma an old hag. fun fact, she was actually, Mike already touched on this, that she was actually a teacher in the original Nightmare on Elm Street as well. It's frustrating to me that Josh continues to not accept any of this, like, despite the shit that he's seen. And I mean, I understand that his memory's all jacked up, but it just seems dumb that he, like, continues to fight it after some of this. So that's just a horror movie cliche that I kind of wish they would have backed off a little bit of. I don't understand where was Josh's mom during all of this? Like, it would have saved a lot of time if she had just gone in there with him and told him the truth. Then it would have saved this whole scene. But then again, I guess you would have had to cut that out. So, the whole further thing to me is very interesting. You know, not many times it has the quote unquote, like, afterlife type thing really been done in movies that I've seen. The further, to me, comes across as like a mixture between like a less funny Beetlejuice version and the Upside Down in Stranger Things.
Right.
So I actually really like how it's just pitch black until, for whatever reason, like, things just present themselves, which doesn't really make sense. But I don't know. I don't really question that. But I can see how someone would think of it as, you know, maybe being cheesy, but I enjoyed it. But like Mike said, I'm a nerd. I'm a fan of science fiction too. So maybe that's why, you know, speaking of that, I'm going to nerd out a little bit. And Specs picking up that figure and saying Starfleet Series 1. Look, it's not even a fucking thing. Like, literally just random nonsense to try to sound nerdy. That wasn't even a Star Trek figure he had in his hand. Just want to say that.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Would have never known the difference. Not going to lie to you, brother. That's okay. That's what makes the show great. Horror movie cliche 101. The husband doesn't believe the wife. Wow. Where have we seen that before? Oh, okay. Every damn fucking haunting movie ever made. So that kind of bugs me a little bit. But especially because where the twist comes later, it really doesn't make any sense. You kind of touched on it, Brian. I like the scene where the room is kind of torn apart. That is, I love the way that suspense builds. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie just because I'm emotionally invested in that character at least. So all that stuff is really good. So first, and okay, here I go. Time to shit on Darth Maul light. This Darth Maul looks like you bought it at fucking Big Lots for
a wish.
It looks like you bought it at Big Lots for $2.99. And someone hand painted it and it was probably a third grader. It looks like ass. It's not scary to me at all. I'm just not a fan, and it takes me out of the movie. It really does. That's how much I don't like this particular red faced demon, and it's really bad later. But here you get your first glimpse, and kind of like The Conjuring 2, when I see too much, I laughed. I honestly laughed. This last time I said, geez, I forgot how bad that demon looks. It was that bad for me. Not a fan. And it really kind of pulled me away. Tucker and Specs is very Sci-Fi Channel Ghost Hunter. So there's some like comedy relief there a little bit for me. And James Whannell, much better acting in this movie than the first Saw. That's all I'm going to say.
Lee Whannell.
Oh, that's what I meant. Hey, Juan Linnell. Yeah, you're right. So Lee Whannell, much better acting in this movie than he was in the first Saw. That's for damn sure. By the way, this is where I wrote down, and you can suck on my finger here, Dustin. I wrote down, my girl, Lynn Shay, is here, baby. She is here to represent horror movie veteran, and I love when people cast a horror movie veteran in another horror movie. I'm like, there's Lynn Shay. You know, I like that. And I think in this character, look, it's not her favorite character of mine because I'm kind of like taken out of the story at this point. But I think she plays her character well. So I don't have necessarily a big problem with that. The acting in across the board, though, from Lynn Shay to Rose Byrne, Pat Wilson, everybody, you know, even Tucker and Specs, I'm a big fan of the acting just across the board in this set of scenes. You know, everything with the house hunting or the ghost hunting scene or demon hunting scene, whatever you want to call it, I think it's really well done across the board. I mean, I'm going to repeat myself because there is more good acting later, but I really like it in that set of scenes. And I love the idea of the boy being haunted more so than a house or an inanimate object like Annabelle or something like that. Like that adds a little bit, I just kind of, as weird as it sounds, it adds a little bit more realism to it for me, where I could kind of buy into that, not so much like a doll or a chair or a mirror looking in your Oculus, where I can kind of buy into this a little bit more. So, but it does kind of complicate things later. Like the twist that comes and the stuff, you know, where they go into the further and all that, it just kind of complicates things later for me. But I did like that. Like, I think it's at least interesting and different. By the way, big boo to when Lynn Shay's character says Insidious Agenda. Fuck you. Anytime you put the movie title in there, you try to sneak it in, get the fuck out, man. And you know, Josh is kind of me, which is why later the twist is complicated, because he doesn't buy into this stuff. And he's kind of like me, where I would believe my wife because she's obviously experiencing some real stuff here. But I wouldn't believe this kooky Moonian ghost hunting lady for a second. Not a chance. If she came into my house and said she saw this demon, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here, lady. And that's just where I stand. It's kind of weird, though, to see Patrick Wilson call out somebody for being a hack ghost hunter when he fucking played one for three movies. Oh, sorry. Sorry, what'd I do? Oh, anyway. So that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. Oh, one more thing. The acting by Pat Wilson in the scene where he goes in his son's room and he's looking at the drawings, I think it's great. Again, I'm emotionally invested in that part of this story. And, it was right there in front of him this whole time. And he finally believes everything. So I really like the acting because, you know, the revelation there is at least good and well executed. But I still, still stand by the fact that it was just really ironic to see Patrick Wilson call somebody out for being shitty at a ghost hunting.
Hey, Mike, just in Lena Winnell's defense for writing it, like, and I don't have the fast facts in front of me, so, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this movie called, like, The Further before, like, originally, instead of Insidious? Maybe it was written, like, with that as the title, and that maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just trying to defend him a little bit.
That's fair, but if it wasn't.
All right, so... Boy, where do I begin? First of all, I want to say that Josh's skepticism really took me out of it a lot. And it did leading up
to
these scenes. Because, first of all, what does he have to lose by at least humoring his wife and playing along with what she so passionately believes? Nothing. Don't be a dick. Be a good husband and play along. And so even if you don't believe it. But just him just shutting it down, saying, no, we're not doing this. Like, I think that's a dick move. And it also, this movie came out 3 years after a film that we've recently reviewed called Paranormal Activity. And I think that these group of scenes, more so than a lot, play off of that film. Or at least, if they don't play off of it, they take me out of it because we just recently reviewed it. So with the whole Josh's skepticism, then he finally buys in. Whatever, with the house not being the one that haunted, it's the person. Like, I like that because it goes against a lot of cliches, but also at the same time, we just did Paranormal Activity, so it's right there in the back of my mind when I'm watching this film again. I hadn't watched it in so many years, and now I'm just like, that seems like they pulled that from that. You know, it's the kid that's haunted because he's an astral traveler or whatever the hell they called him. Anyway. I hate the fact that she used the title Insidious. I think that's hokey. That, like, you don't need that. You can call a movie, you know, whatever the hell you want, but you don't have to include it in the movie. How many times? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Whatever. I don't like it. Another thing I didn't like was the phrase "the further." I think that's kind of weird. Like, the upside down in Stranger Things, it sounds cool. Like, the upside down, it makes sense because it's upside down of reality or whatever. But the further, to me, just didn't do it for me. Maybe it's because Lynn Shay's the one that delivered the line. I don't know.
Jeez, get off my grandma.
That's what she.
Hey, will you chill the fuck out of there before I have to come all the way to Knoxville?
Leave my grandma alone.
Okay.
The Gilf Hunter.
Hey, you know what? Fuck it. Lynn Shay, call me sometime.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, hey, you saw what she did to Woody Harrelson and Kingpin. I'm just saying.
God damn right I did, pal. You don't think Woody enjoyed that shit?
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Like Nightmare on Elm Street Lynn Shay or this or Insidious Lynn Shay?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Don't clarify. Hey. It doesn't matter. It's good. I know the answer.
I will say this. I'd rather be Munson out in the middle of nowhere than have to watch Lynn Shay movies for the rest of my life. So, second of all, Specs and Tucker, man, they really did not do it for me. And it's not – I agree with what you said about Lee Whannell.
Yeah,
I know, brother. I'm sorry. But I know what you said about Lee Whannell doing a better job in this movie than he did in Saw, and you're 100% right. But to me, this movie, up until this point, was not built for that type of comedic relief. Earlier, you had Patrick Wilson joking about being the, you know, most attractive husband or something, biggest muscles, blah, blah, blah. That's okay humor because it's natural chemistry between husband and wife. Like, it's like we're looking into their life and seeing what they normally do. These two characters were just introduced in a very serious conjecture of this movie, and like, oh, here, laugh at these fucks because they're weird as hell. This guy just wants to eat all the time and be very dry and monotone in how he delivers this thing. I don't like it. I don't need that in this film at this point in time. I feel like this was their attempt to just make us laugh and break up the tension, but it seemed a little forced. So, you know, I'm sorry to just go on such a deep dive of shit talking on these scenes, but that's just how I feel. I will say that I like Patrick Wilson's acting in the scene where he says, okay, let's do it.
but the circumstances led up to it ruined it for me because he shouldn't have been a dick in the first place. But I do think he acted his ass off when he saw the pictures, and you could see the real tears in his eyes. You could feel the passion in his voice when he's telling her, okay, let's do it. So that was good. The rest of it bad.
I feel like I'm listening Fair to enough. Brian and Freddy vs. Jason again.
Jeez. Man. All the bullying on this podcast. I'm quitting.
No, I just want to touch on the one jump scare with the red-faced demon. The first time I watched this movie, that jump scare got me, and like it, the demon scared me that time. But I agree with y'all. Later on, the scene where we're introduced to it, that's the worst part of this whole movie to me. But we'll get there in a couple scenes. Elise is back now. Specs and Tucker set up cameras. Do not speak or question what's going on. Lights are dimmed, and Elise puts this. I wrote this gas mask looking thing on. Specs calls out for Dalton. Answer us. The camera flashes. Specs says his mother and father are searching for him. Follow my voice, Dalton. If they hear me, they will hurt me, Dalton says. The man with fire on his face. It cuts at Dalton, shaking in his bed. Help me. Over and over. Specs is writing down. Specs starts to write some vile stuff. The camera flashes a lot, and then Elise passes out. Dalton is in the room. He presses his hand to the table and makes him fly across the room. The other demons, ghosts, whatever they are, they're in the room now. Elise grabs Dalton and says to leave his body. The lights turn back on, and Dalton appears to be okay. I mean, he's still in a coma, but he's not hurt right now. Specs is using raw meat as an ice pack. Tucker shows the demon behind Dalton on the camera. Lorraine shows back up. They tell Josh they have to tell him something. The reason she knew to call Elise was because she had to call Elise for Josh as a boy. At 8, you suffered night terrors. An old woman would visit him at night. She hands Josh pictures of his younger self, and the old woman was in the background of all of them. Closer and closer she got. Still scared to take his picture now, he had to suppress his memory. Elise tells Josh he's the only one who can save Dalton, and he doesn't have much time. Renee says, you can do this, and I love you. And the next two scenes are the ending. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, see, and that's what I was talking about. If Lorraine would have just told them this the first time that, you know, Josh didn't really believe his wife and stuff and kind of kicked her out, we'd have skipped that whole middle part. I don't know. Anyway, the mask scene came across a little cheesy. I mean, I get that. I think it was probably more of a visual tool, like a creative choice or good visual or something. I don't know, but it actually reminded me of something honestly more along the lines of Ghostbusters than a horror film, which if you know me, that's not a bad thing. The use of the flash bulbs I thought were really good. It added disorientation to your senses, you know, to come along with the fast cuts it gave you. I really liked the cinematography there. I do think that they should have written like a little bit more emotion from Renee here, which, you know, poor Rose Byrne. I mean, she'd have been crying the whole flipping movie just about with these emotional scenes. But I feel like she should have had some here because I thought, like, you know, the thought and the emotion from talking to your son that has been in a coma and you're communicating with him now, to me, like, that would trigger a lot more emotion than what we're getting here from her. And, you know, I felt like they just really missed an opportunity there. Even from Patrick Wilson, you know, that would have been a very powerful. It could have been a very powerful scene, I thought, and more than just trying to make it scary. Also, you know, there's this big intense scene and my man Lee Winnell Specs, you know, is writing everything he's hearing super huge with a color pencil. How much paper are we wasting here? Like, use a damn regular size pencil. Like, what's going on here? Like that, I don't know why that really bothered me. It was like writing four words and then turning the page. By the way, this is what I was talking about earlier. The demon that Patrick's mom dreams about, what's her name? Lorraine. But the one when she dreams about them and dream, you know, is points over to Dalton, best looking demon. They should have went with that one instead of Darth Maul. Like, and, you know, kept him in the shadows, you know, didn't really show you, you know, his whole crazy painted lipstick face, which I think they call him the lipstick demon. I don't know what the hell, but. You know, that's the one I liked that demon. I'll say liked that demon. Like, it was the best looking one to me for the story. The most believable one, I guess. That's what I meant to say.
The lipstick demon, more like dipshit demon. That demon sucks, man. I'm sorry. Look, this is the set of scenes that complete. So, what happened? What I do? This is the set of scenes that just kind of completely removes me from this movie. And it's not that it. Again, I'm going to repeat myself because it's true. Well shot. I love like the, I don't know what you call that, the camera bulb that keeps kind of going off and on or whatever you want to call that effect. I think is it makes it different and interesting, and I'm a fan of it. I get it. But some of this stuff is just too much for me, and it's just as a not necessarily a non-believer but a skeptic as far as supernatural stuff, this is where I can't really invest. Gas mask, what are we doing? Or whatever the fuck you call that thing. No, not a fan. And you mentioned it, Brian. You know, the stuff where the scene where Lee Winnell was writing stuff down is it's just too much for me. It's hokey. I don't like it. I don't really know why I don't like it. I don't have like a great explanation for it, but other than that, I'm just not buying it. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. You know, then there's this one demon that just completely removes me. He looks like a character from Twilight. Like, I'm not a big fan. I like the twist of Josh being, you know, haunted in the past and all that stuff. I don't necessarily hate it. I like it. But, and again, I didn't see that coming on the first time I ever saw this movie. So I think it adds to the story, but it also complicates things in the past for me. Like, okay. And like you said, it removes some suspense that, upon a rewatch, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. Right. I know that stuff comes a little bit later, but I just want to touch on it here since we kind of find that out. The old woman is the creepiest thing yet in this movie to me. She's the one thing that looks kind of creepy. You know, I mean, none of these other demon, ghost, monster things look that creepy to me, you know, so she kind of stands out. But this set of scenes, I just don't have a whole lot to say because there's a whole lot of nothing going on when there's a whole lot going on, if that makes sense. Like, to me, it's kind of boring here. Like, and I know there's a lot of quick cuts and all this stuff, but it just doesn't do anything for me. I'm not a fan of this. And I don't know, maybe that's just a skeptic in me, which is dumb because, again, I can enjoy Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, but I can't enjoy this, which makes absolutely no sense. But I think this movie takes itself serious, and a movie like Dream Warriors knows what it is. And so I can kind of enjoy the two things separately. I know what the two things are. This movie, it's not supposed to be campy, and there's times where I'm laughing, and I don't think that's the intention. So that's kind of why I don't like this set of scenes.
Oh, brother. Okay, so... The issues that I have with this movie really progress as the movie does. So what I mean by that is I actually liked it, despite what I may have said up until now, I actually liked the movie up until a few scenes ago. It's just the further we get, it's like, what the hell is really going on here? Like, it just keeps getting more and more convoluted and hokey. So the scenes where, you know, they're sitting around the table having their little seance, and she puts Larry Metunsil's gas mask on. I don't think they explained the equipment well enough. And yes, I said Larry Metunsil's gas mask. It looks like she was just putting a gas mask bong on and getting rip face Diesel sitting there at the table while she whispers naughty somethings into Lee Winnell's ear. That's what I looked like. But it just could have been done different. I don't think that we needed Tucker and specs at this scene. Like, he's going to be able to hear what I'm saying, and she's kind of muffled whispering through. That part's hokey. That shit, cut that out. We don't need that. I don't want to drive a lot of these dead horses even further into the dirt than what you guys have said. But yeah, these scenes really do take me all the way out of the movie based on all the good that they've done. All the things that I did enjoy up until these parts, it's just there's things that I can't get past, and hokiness is one of them. Like you said, Mike, this set of scenes really, like, I was looking at like, what the hell is going on? Whereas when I watch something like Dream Warriors, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, I'm like chuckling, but it's also because of how it's meant to be. Like, you're meant to have fun with that horror movie. Whereas this one, it's like, okay, they're dead ass about this, huh? Okay. Well, I just can't. It doesn't work for me, brother. So I'm out on these scenes. I don't want to keep shitting on it, so I'm just going to end it right there. But that's just how I'm feeling.
All right, these are the last two scenes. "Keep one foot in this world," Elise tells Josh. Josh closes his eyes and relaxes to the sound of the metronome. He says it's useless, then realizes he's in the further. Elise says to follow his voice. He wanders into the further. He sees Dalton, but he runs away. He then sees his younger self, and he points towards their old house. A woman in a wedding dress goes up the stairs. He hears a woman crying in the corner, then hears a little boy laugh and run through the hall. He goes back downstairs to see a man reading the newspaper, a mother ironing, and a girl on the couch. And I wrote, that's creepy to me. He hears three gunshots, and a smiling woman shot the three in the living room. All four appear in front of Josh with that creepy smile. He goes in the attic and sees the red door. He fights the figure who charged at Renee. His body begins to convulse. Renee tells Elise to help. Elise says, "You are stronger, Josh." And then Josh pushes the demon away, which I'm not a fan of that. It was just that easy just to get rid of it. Yeah. He enters the red door. He finds a crying Dalton. Dalton appears scared when he sees the red-faced demon and hears the record playing. He gets Dalton out of the shackles. Then the demon appears beside Josh, and he hisses at Josh, knocking him back. Dalton runs off. The house begins to shake. Josh grabs Dalton, and they run off. Elise tells them he found Dalton. The house shakes even more, and the lights go out. Renee calls out to Josh. They follow her voice. They hear a noise in the house. Specs and Turner search the house. A hand grabs Specs' hand as he closes the drawer in the kitchen. Elise sends Specs and Lorraine to check on Dalton. The demons are in, you know, there's some demons that are in Dalton's closet. Renee calls out Josh's name, and they shine the light on him. Dalton runs away from the red-faced demon. Josh encounters the old woman again. "Leave me alone," he yells. Josh wakes up as he enters his body. Dalton now wakes up. She hugs Josh, and things seem happy. Dalton is eating a ton and is tired somehow. Josh looks through the pictures, and Elise gives him, you know, a weird look when she grabs the pictures from him. She grabs the camera and takes his picture. He gets pissed off. He grabs Elise and strangles her. Renee goes into the room and sees Elise dead in the chair. She can't find Josh. She grabs the camera and sees Josh has been taken over by the old woman. And the film ends with Josh touching a scared Renee's shoulder. That's the ending I got. Go ahead, Brian.
So, again, I think the sound design and the lighting really make the further what it's supposed to be. You know, I love the suspense it builds up also with that family frozen in time, but yet not really frozen. I thought that was kind of a creepy little scene. And it definitely gives me like 1990 ghost vibes with his out of body looking at his real body scene. That was cool. That was good. What I didn't like here is this whole, like, you get a fairy tale vibe from the Nightcrawler from X-Men / Darth Maul demon house thing. That's like the one part of this maybe I would have changed. I mean, you had him, like, what was he sewing something, like Jeepers Creepers or something? I don't know. Some of it seems like almost biblical on some parts, and then almost like fairy tale-ish. So I don't really know how to explain it, but it's not creepy enough really to me. And I don't really know what I would have done differently, but I think that's definitely that whole scene right there is something I would have changed. Another nitpick. Why do you always just leave fucking Dalton alone in the room? Like, come the hell on. I don't understand. They always leave that Joker alone in the room and go off to another room and do something else when the whole thing's about him. Also, something I didn't understand at the end, the spirits, quote unquote, cross over into our world, Elise says, but I thought they needed a body for that. You know, look, I like I said, I like science fiction, and science fiction bullshits you with some bullshit science that's not ever, like, not real, but it's like, hey, I'm going to explain this away by using some bullshit science. So that's kind of like what I'm easy that way. I'll take whatever you give me. So you know, I buy into it, but I do admit that it has problems. Also, it's not believable to me that Josh would just leave Dalton in the kitchen and tell him to go on without him. Look, I understand the suspense thing and splitting them up and therefore, like, leaving the whole, like, is it them or is it a ghost demon at the end and making them confront the witch. But it's not very realistic that he would just go that far to get him and then just okay, I'm tired, so go on without me. That to me is not realistic as a dad anyway. But, and the old lady, little fun fact, was played by a man in this, but spoiler alert for the second one, they hadn't really yet decided that it was going to be like a cross-dressing man, like it is revealed in chapter two. So I think, you know, in this one, they hadn't really gotten that far, but it played out nicely. And lastly, the twist at the end, I really liked. I hate that this is that I only have a worst kill, and it's this one, they killed off my grandma, which again, I don't know if Juan L, you know, has this, had this two movie plan like already or not. I'd guess not, based on the prequels they did with her, like moving the series forward where she's like the lead of the series. I would guess they probably would go back and not kill her. But if you know, that's just a guess, you know, without doing any research. So that's my thoughts on the ending.
Yeah, so you said a lot of what I had to say. So I'm going to kind of not touch on every little thing that you mentioned there. But at this point, I'm already disinterested a little bit because it is a convoluted plot at this point to me. And like you said, spoiler on my least favorite kill. Obviously, my grandma died. So, yeah, got that right there. So all the stuff that's like lit with the lantern, I like the way that shot. It reminds me of a good ghost movie, you know, like a good haunting film that I can actually sit and enjoy. But at this point, I'm already so kind of bleh on the other thing. All this stuff within the further is a little hokey. The plot gets, or the writing to me, and I, you know, I think Lee Whannell does other good writing, but here there's just some confusion for me. And it's not just this last time, it's every time I've watched it, and I keep watching it, and I'm still the same amount of confused. Maybe that's my fault. I could obviously be a dumbass, but there's just a lot. There's a lot in this end that just isn't for me. And I like the concept of the further, but I don't think it's well executed. That's just my opinion. A little bit too much of the dipshit demon in this part for me, where again, I'm removed. I'm disconnected. I'm not buying it. And it just isn't. It's not something for me. And one thing I do think the very end does is goes on too long. Some of the stuff, you know, where he's like convulsing and, you know, all the lights go out and all that stuff, it goes on a little too long for me. It takes its sweet ass time to get to the actual end of the movie. And so I'm not a big fan of that as well. But again, it's not, again, nothing on the acting, nothing on the way the movie is made and shot and all that, but the story at this point does not have my interest. And like Dustin mentioned, it's almost like with each set of scenes, the movie loses me. And that's very difficult to do because most things get better as it goes. This is not one of those, not for me at least, where I feel like the first two acts or so are kind of, you know, the first act and a half is pretty solid, and then it just kind of loses its footing. Like I think it loses its story. And I agree with you, Brian and Nico, where I think the second one doesn't necessarily do that. I like it more than I do this one.
Yeah, I mean, this one definitely loses its luster the further we go on, whereas I mentioned Paranormal Activity earlier. That one gains momentum and gets creepier and scarier the further it goes on. This one, to me, becomes more and more hokey and confusing as we go on. Both of those things are, you know, they're not exclusive to each other, hokey and confusing, but by God, they go hand in hand with this one. So, like you said, Brian, with the spirits crossing over, I kind of got my notes out of order here, but with the spirits crossing over, that was one thing that really stood out, is because, like you said, I thought they needed a body to do this. What's the point of all this shit if they can just come and go as they please and scare the shit out of people and grab people and do, you know, cause harm?
What's
this all about? So, Josh, given the double palm strike, like Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter move, what the fuck? I mean, that's all it took. Then why are we not, you know, why are we not hitting up the speed bags and the heavy bags at the gym? Just because if that's all it takes to combat a demon, like, I welcome demons here because I whoop some ass. I can double palm strike all day.
The podcast does not endorse welcoming demons.
True, I don't either, actually. That's just the blatant talking. But
it ain't a problem. It ain't a problem.
Okay, let's just put it this way. Brian and I do not welcome any demon, but not at all. Mike apparently is fair game. So the next thing I have, though, is the scene where you know, Dalton's got his feet chained up and he's trying to get him out. He's like, Dad, he's watching. And then they flash to him and he's got his creepy little manicured nails on the glass there. I really wish that they would have done more with that, because I would have wanted a more of a substantial showdown between, you know, the father and the demon fighting over the son in that scene to get out of the further than what we got. It was kind of just whatever. It was, I would have liked more there. But you're right also, Brian, about Dalton being left alone. What the, like, he's the empty vessel. They have driven that home in the past 20 minutes, and you're just going to leave him alone. Like, it's fine, which I'm not sure they could do anything about it anyway if they were present in the room. But still, I would want to
be double palm strike.
maybe even a super kick. Who knows? let's see. The last thing that I got here. Oh, yes. I really liked the ending. The actual ending, because when she flashes the camera out of nowhere and he gets all pissed and we don't realize why, and then he chokes her to death, and he really choked her to death. Shout out. Sorry. But
rest in peace, Grandma. Rest in
peace. But no, that scene to me was the heightened drama of the whole movie, because it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why'd you just kill her? And then we get the twist. When they go back and review, and they, you know, we look at it and we see that that wasn't him, that was the demon. I like that. That part did it for me. If the past hour and 20 minutes didn't, that part did. If they'd done more of that shit and less of the other, I'm on board with this, and we probably would have had a much higher score.
It's about how you finish, Dustin. It's about how you finish.
That is very true. It's a game of inches.
Oh, my God.
Has anybody got any final thoughts before we jump into the fun facts?
No, sir.
I've only got a couple of them. The film was just shot in 3 weeks. 33 violins were used for the theme music, and these are all of IMDb. Ethan Hawke turned down the role of Josh Lambert. And the other one that I had was the one that Brian brought up earlier. When Josh is in the classroom, there's a Billy the Puppet drawing, and then the name James Wan is wrote on there, and there are other crew member names written on the board. Does anybody else have fun facts?
I've got one fun fact that basically that Wan-El and Wan, actually, I didn't know this, they went to film school together, and Wan is quoted as saying, you know, he's very trusting in Wan-El's writing, and Wan-El is likewise very trusting in Wan's directing, according to them.
Yeah, I just had the one that was mentioned earlier about Ethan Hawke, the GOAT. The only thing that would have made it better is if it was Ed Norton or David Arquette, but it is what it is.
Or Brad Pitt. Yep, absolutely.
No, definitely not. I probably wouldn't even push play if it was Brad Pitt instead of Patrick Wilson.
Oh, God. Suck it, buddy. From the back. Anyway, all I have, hey, I know it was a little crude, but hey, I had to do what I had to do there. Don't you shit on Brad Pitt.
Escalated quickly.
It's a little true is what it is. Anyway, this movie had a $1.5 million budget, made $99.5 million box office. Okay. So pretty nice profit there for it. Insidious, hence multiple sequels.
Right.
That's goat shit from my guy James Wan right there.
Oh, God damn it.
That's what goats do.
Oh, my God. That's all I got, brother.
Is that all right, sounds good. Let's jump into our rating. We're going to let Dustin go ahead and go first, because I think he's made it pretty clear how he feels about it.
All right. So I don't have a least favorite kill. I do have a favorite kill. I know you guys already said it, but I just want to drive home the fact that it was very satisfying to me. Anyway, regardless, that's neither here nor there. As far as rating goes, look, I'm sorry. I understand that this movie has a lot of people that like it. I have heard about this movie back when I joined the podcast. I had friends tell me, oh, you got to talk about Insidious. I was like, yeah, I remember that movie. And just going off memory, I enjoyed it. But brother, let me tell you, this movie doesn't work for me in 2020, Bubba. I'm really sorry to say that this movie is going to get probably the lowest rating I've ever given. I'd have to go back to check the stats.
Oh my God.
I know, man. It just, it's so hokey and cliche at points and so convoluted that it loses me. Don't hate me, Brian. I know you picked it. 4-7-5.
4-7-5. Wow.
Hokey and cliche like Jason Takes Manhattan. All right. Can't wait. Here we go. All right. I'll go next.
I think you gave, Joyride a 4-7-5 as well.
No,
it's a tie, baby. It's a tie. Okay, so overall, I like the film, but I don't love it as someone that's not really scared by supernatural or really even into it as a thing. This one's a little too out there for me. It's not grounded like some of the other ones. Like, I think Paranormal Activity does a really good job. I think the Conjuring series does a good job. There's some, there's a lot of other movies that I do enjoy. This one is one that I can say I like, but it's not super rewatchable to me. I've kind of hit on all my pros with the acting, the direction, cinematography, lighting, really well-made film. No argument here. But the con is just the overall plot of this particular Insidious film. Again, I like the second one more. The plot of this does nothing for me. So the story is a con, which is a kind of a death knell for any movie. Darth Maul, you know, melted, you know, when you buy a Frosty at Wendy's and it starts to melt, that's kind of how this Darth Maul looks to me.
Jesus.
So, just being honest. And some scenes do kind of drag. There's a couple scenes to me that just kind of take a little longer than they actually should. So, overall, like, not love, not super rewatchable for me. So, I'm going to go 6.75, which, again, I like. There's stuff that I really love, and there's just stuff that take me completely out of it. I feel like I'm almost being a little generous just because – I like the acting so much. If this cast had been almost any different outside of Brad Pitt being cast, I would have probably knocked it down a whole point. Not that bum ass Ethan Hawke. So I tell you what, if Ethan Hawke was in this movie, it'd be a 4.75.
Hey, Ethan Hawke is great and Sinister.
I know. Oh, he's great and Sinister, but not this movie. Fuck him because Dustin likes him.
I would like to take this time to tell Mike that these hands are rated E for everyone. And yeah, go fuck yourself.
Love you.
All right. I'll go now. I don't have a least favorite or favorite kill. I mean, there's only the one, and I'm not going to put it either way because it just. I mean, hell, she's in all the movies still. So I mean, is she really dead? I mean, Jesus. I gave it an 8.5, Brian. So I mean, I'll save the rating a little bit. I love the movie.
Get the acting average up great. A little bit. Get the average.
Hey, I'm here for it. The acting is great. I'm a huge Patrick Wilson, James Wan, Lee Whannell, and Lin Shaye fan. It's another demon haunted house movie, but it's done very well. The first viewing of this movie scared me, honestly. The old lady is an homage to I didn't read this, but I think it's an homage to Mary Shaw from Dead Silence, another James Wan and Lee Whannell movie. And I really like Dead Silence. The cons are, I wrote this, Brian. I wrote, cons are what Brian has said in the past. The appearance of the red-faced demon is not great, and it takes me out of it bad. It bothers me how easy they got away from the red-faced demon initially as well, too, even though it does get into the house. I agree with y'all that the ending is too long in the further, but I really love the ending with the revealing that Josh has been taken over by the old lady, which turns out to be I think it's Patrick Crane. I might have that name wrong, but I love Insidious 2. Insidious 2 improves upon this movie. But go ahead, Brian.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, I got written down. You know, again, does this film have outlandish concepts, especially in the third act? Yes. Do I buy into it? Maybe because I'm a science fiction fan a little bit more than Mike. Maybe that is the case there. You know, I also, like Nico, feel like this movie really benefited even more from the second one because of the depth it gave to this one, you know, which is why I broke my own rule. You know, I went into Conjuring totally untainted from, like, you know, from watching a sequel. But in this one, I went ahead and watched the second one, and I'm glad I did because it really plays a big part into this one again. You know, it gives it even more depth, like I said, again, and I know I keep saying it, but same way Back to the Future 2 does the first one. And I, honestly, I'm really glad I gave this franchise a chance. I really liked it. I actually rated this a 7.83 for those keeping score. So if doing the averages, I thought it might make it a little bit easier. 7.83 is what I gave this one.
All right. Lord. Well, you know, 7.83.
That definitely, no, the double decimals are out now. This is ridiculous.
that definitely is the first score we've had that's not divisible by 0.25. But regardless, that puts us at a 6.9575.
Oh, I had it right. Let's go, baby.
leave it to me to ruin the decimals. My bad, guys. I ruin everything. No, can't even use decimals anymore. All right, round it to an 8.
Round it to an 8. No, we're good. Right, this is the one and only 6.9575. So
let's go. Hey, Mike, before you announce your pick for next week, I just want to say, in Insidious 2, to me, has one of the greatest scenes of tension without, you know, any score really. Whenever what's her name, Renee, she's in the room with the woman demon, the "Look what you made me do" scene. That scene is amazing. I might pick Insidious 2 in a couple months because I just love that movie. But Brother Mike's pick is next week. Do you want to announce it, brother?
Yeah, I do, actually. To the dismay of many and to the joy of many others, my next pick is Cabin in the Woods.
Let's go. Metaphor
all over my face. Let's go. It's about time we did it. And it was a toss-up between this movie and the movie that I picked for my next pick, which I'll save and hold on to. Kind of a toss-up on which one I wanted to do next. I'm going to just go ahead and stick with Mike Loves Meta, and this is one of those. So Cabin in the Woods, if you get all the references, this is for you. If you don't, sorry about your damn luck.
And I'm just going to say, Mike, I'm going to go into this movie with an open mind. I'm not going to go into it clouded.
Sure you will.
Because I've honestly admitted I didn't like the movie the first time I watched it. Well, heck, I went into The Shining thinking I would hate it, but I ended up rating it the highest out of all of us.
Hey, I thought you would hate it too.
Listen, I'm going to shit on a movie that you and Dustin love. Trust me, leave that in.
I think love is a strong word. I just like it.
I think he likes it even more than you hate it.
Eh, we'll see. Anybody got any final thoughts before we get out of here?
That's it, fellas.
Don'tgooutthere.com.
Yes, don'tgooutthere.com.
Yeah, go check the website out. You can listen to all of our episodes, pick up some merch, check out our interviews, listen to all of our celebrity shout-outs. They're awesome. I shout-out to Brian. He got Manu Bennett for the 30 Days of Night. Wow, I love Manu Bennett. I love Spartacus. And that's one of my personal favorites. So big shout out to Brian for that one. Really hope y'all enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back next week. And just want to remind everybody to don't go out there.